600 commoners. Some years later, after the French Revolution, Edmund Burke, looking up at the press gallery of the House of Commons, said, "Yonder sits the Fourth Estate, and they are more important than them all." Late Night Extra, media moguls battle to save their empires. Chapter 1. The Globe, 5th of November 1991. Armstrong faces bankruptcy. The odds were stacked against him. But the odds had never worried Richard Armstrong in the past. "Faites vos jeux, mesdames et messieurs, place your bets." Armstrong stared down at the green baize. The mountain of red chips that had been placed in front of him 20 minutes earlier had dwindled to a single stack. He had already lost 40,000 francs that evening. But what was 40,000 francs when you had squandered $1 billion in the past 12 months? He leaned over and deposited all his remaining chips on zero.
"Les jeux sont faits, rien ne va plus,"
the croupier said as he flicked his wrist and set the wheel in motion. The little white ball sped around the wheel before falling and jumping in and out of the tiny black and red slots. Armstrong stared into the distance. Even after the ball had finally settled, he refused to lower his eyes.
"26,"
declared the croupier, and immediately began scooping up the chips that littered every number other than 26. Armstrong walked away from the table without even glancing in the direction of the croupier. He moved slowly past the crowded backgammon and roulette tables until he reached the double doors that led out into the real world. A tall man in a long blue coat pulled one of them open for him and smiled at the well-known gambler, anticipating his usual 100-franc tip. But that wouldn't be possible tonight. Armstrong ran a hand through his thick black hair as he walked down through the lush terraced gardens of the casino and on past the fountain. It had been 14 hours since the emergency board meeting in London, and he was beginning to feel exhausted. Despite his bulk, Armstrong hadn't consulted a set of scales for several years, he kept up a steady pace along the promenade, only stopping when he reached his favourite restaurant overlooking the bay. He knew every table would have been booked at least a week in advance, and the thought of the trouble he was about to cause brought a smile to his face for the first time that evening. He pushed open the door of the restaurant. A tall, thin waiter swung round and tried to hide his surprise by bowing low.
"Good evening, Mr. Armstrong," he said. "How nice to see you again. Will anyone be joining you?"
"No, Henri." The head waiter quickly guided his unexpected customer through the packed restaurant to a small alcove table. Once Armstrong was seated, he presented him with a large leather-bound menu. Armstrong shook his head.
"Don't bother with that, Henri. You know exactly what I like."
The head waiter frowned. European royalty, Hollywood stars, even Italian footballers didn't unnerve him. But whenever Richard Armstrong was in the restaurant, he was constantly on edge. And now he was expected to select Armstrong's meal for him. He was relieved that his famous customer's usual table had been free. If Armstrong had arrived a few minutes later, he would have had to wait at the bar while they hastily set up a table in the center of the room. By the time Henri placed a napkin on Armstrong's lap, the wine waiter was already pouring a glass of his favorite champagne. Armstrong stared out of the window into the distance, but his eyes did not focus on the large yacht moored at the north end of the bay. His thoughts were several hundred miles away with his wife and children. How would they react when they heard the news? A lobster bisque was placed in front of him at a temperature that would allow him to eat it immediately. Armstrong disliked having to wait for anything to cool down. He would rather be burned. To the head waiter's surprise, his customer's eyes remained fixed on the horizon as his champagne glass was filled for a second time. How quickly, Armstrong wondered, would his colleagues on the board, most of them placemen with titles or connections, begin to cover their tracks and distance themselves from him once the company's accounts were made public? Only Sir Paul Maitland, he suspected, would be able to salvage his reputation. Armstrong picked up the dessert spoon.